Heaven's Net is Wide. The First Tale of the Otori by Leon Hearn. Read by Julia Fletcher and Paul Bamer. Heaven's net is wide, but its mesh is fine. Chapter 1. The footfall was light, barely discernible among all the myriad noises of the autumn forest. The rustle of leaves scattering in the northwesterly wind, the distant beating of wings as geese flew southward, the echoing sounds of the village far below. Yet, Isamu heard it and recognized it. He put the digging tool down on the damp grass, along with the roots he had been collecting, and moved away from it. Its sharp blade spoke to him, and he did not want to be tempted by any tool or weapon. He turned in the direction of his cousin's approach and waited. Kotaro came into the clearing invisible, in the way of the tribe, but Isamu did not bother concealing himself in the same fashion. He knew all his cousin's skills. They were almost the same age. Kotaro, less than a year younger, and had trained together, striving always to outdo each other. They had been friends, of a sort, and rivals their entire life. Isamu had thought he had escaped here in this remote village on the eastern borders of the three countries, far from the great cities where the tribe preferred to live and work, selling their supernatural skills to whoever paid them highest, and finding plenty of employment in these times of intrigue and strife among the warriors. But no one escapes the tribe forever. How many times had he heard this warning as a child? How many times had he repeated it to himself with the dark pleasure that the old skills induce, as he delivered the silent knife thrust, the twist of the garrote, or his own preferred method, the poison that fell drop by drop into a sleeping mouth or an unprotected eye? He did not doubt that it echoed through Kotaro's mind now as his cousin's shape came shimmering into sight. For a moment, they stared at each other without speaking. The forest itself seemed to fall quiet, and in that silence, Isamu thought he could hear his wife's voice far below. If he could hear her, then Kotaro could too, for both cousins had the Kikuta gift of far hearing, just as they both bore the straight line of the Kikuta that divided the palm of the hand. "It took me a long time to find you," Kotaro said finally. "That was my intention," Isamu replied. Compassion was still unfamiliar to him, and he shrank from the pain it awakened in his newborn heart. He thought with regret of the girl's kindness, her high spirits, her goodness. He wished he could save her from grief. He wondered if their brief marriage had already planted new life in her, and what she would do after his death. She would find comfort from her people, from the Secret One. She would be sustained by her inner strength. She would weep for him and pray for him. No one in the tribe would do either. Following a barely understood instinct, like the birds in this wild place that he had come to know and love, he decided he would delay his death and lead Kotaro far away into the forest. Maybe neither of them would return from its vastness. He split his image and sent his second self toward his cousin, while he ran swiftly and in complete silence, his feet hardly touching the ground between the slender trunks of the young cedars, leaping over boulders that had tumbled from the crags above, skimming across slippery black rocks below waterfalls, vanishing and reappearing in the spray. He was aware of everything around him, the gray sky and damp air of the 10th month, the chill wind that heralded winter, reminding him that he would never see snow again. The distant throaty bellow of a stag, the whir of wings, and the harsh calls as his flight disturbed a flock of crows. So he ran, and Kotaro followed him, until hours later and miles from the village he had made his home, Isamu allowed his pace to slow and his cousin to catch up with him. He had come farther into the forest than ever before. There was no sun. He had no idea where he was. He hoped Kotaro would be as lost.